This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 31st of March 2023. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today in the studio we have our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And the first thing to say is if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's the number that you can find on the key fob. If you've got a problem with the playback box, before reporting it as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.WinchesterTalkingNews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent one first on the list. Now let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Big issue hero Kev moves on. Road closure threat to cafe. And TV celebrity presents Queen's Award to zoo. And the first headline story. Daphne, please.
Big issue hero Kev moves on. It's all become a little bit quieter on Winchester's High Street lately. For years, Kev Colick has sold the big issue from outside Tesco Express. Known for his cheeky remarks, fancy dress and charity work, Kev has been an interesting part of city life for many years. He ended up on the streets after his father died and he went into care, joining the Big Issue in 1991. Originally from Cornwall, he started selling the Big Issue in Winchester in 1999. He was well known in the city centre, with shops and residents alike, and he often spoke to passing people, calling out humorous comments to attract attention. In fact, his legendary status even saw him switch on the Christmas lights one year after he raised money for children in need, as well as seeing him feature in one of street artist Hendog's murals at the bus station. One year, there were even calls for a statue of Kev to be installed at the university alongside Greta Thunberg. Hundreds signed a petition in support. Kev would often be seen in fancy dress, such as a putsy suit, and at Christmas time, he would get out his Christmas tree outfit. However, Winchester has been a tad quieter of late as Kev's spot stood empty. This prompted residents to raise concerns on social media. Some posted in local Facebook group Winchester Rants. One said, "Is it true Big Issue Kev isn't coming back?" One said, "No, he's what made it entertaining downtown." Another added, "He's a fantastic character. Always made me smile even when I didn't feel like smiling. I hope he's gone on to bigger and better things. We will miss him, though. Good luck to him." However, the Big Issue has now confirmed that all is well. He simply moved on to a different county. A spokesperson said, "We don't usually comment on vendors' moving pitch, but we definitely wish him the best." And that's illustrated by a picture of Kev with his cheeky grin in a yellow waterproof suit, holding some rather damp-looking copies of the Big Issue. Good luck, Kev.
Road closure threat to cafe. A cycling cafe has seen a £10,000 decline in trade within the first 3 weeks of a 9-month road closure. Concerns are growing for social enterprise The Handlebar Cafe, part of Bespoke Biking, that will be unable to survive with footfall dramatically decreasing since the closure of Garnier Road in St Cross. The road by St Catherine's Hill was shut at the beginning of March for work on Tunbridge. Business as usual signs are in place, but company director Heather Evans fears pedestrians and cyclists are still unaware they can get through. Heather said, "We are £10,000 down for the month, which admittedly has not been helped by bad weather, and the weekends are still just as busy. We're having to send staff home, so they're losing pay. The worst case scenario is that the whole of Bespoke Biking comes down. We were clobbered by COVID, but managed to flex and survive, and we're hoping we can get through this too. We didn't realise how much trade we would lose from people passing by car, as we are very much a cafe for pedestrians and cyclists. It's had an immediate impact. We need a sign saying that we're open to walkers and cyclists. The access only signs could be read as meaning just residents. I'm hoping that through messaging we can let everyone know that we're still here and open and they can get to us. There's a real love for the Handlebar Cafe, and I believe business will pick up again, especially when the sun comes out. Regular customers Victoria Latrull and Claire Barclay often stop at the cafe after a run with their dogs. Victoria from Sparsholt said, "The cafe is still lovely despite the ongoing work. It's in a prime location and quite the hot spot. It was a bit of a struggle to park, but the contractors were really helpful and it's good to see signs up." Claire from Alsford added, "If you're not a regular, then it's not so obvious. It would be a huge loss if it has to close. So many people love to stop here." The £1.4 million bridge replacement project is expected to finish by the end of November. Garnier Road car park by the cafe and St Catherine's Park and Ride remain open, and pedestrians and cyclists will still be able to use one side of the bridge throughout most of the works. And that piece is accompanied by a photograph of four of the team of the Handlebar Cafe standing on their outdoor decking and not a customer in sight.
Oh dear.
TV celebrity presents Queen's Award to Zoo. Marwell Zoo has become one of the last recipients of the Queen's Award for Enterprise, as presented by a gardening, should we say, horticulturalist TV celebrity. Alan Titchmarsh visited the zoo to present formally the Award for Enterprise in Sustainable Development. The Queen recognised its achievements in biodiversity, conservation, education and sustainability as part of the awards. Mr. Titchmarsh attended as Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire, along with fellow Deputy Lieutenant Simon Tufnell. Presenting the award, the celebrity gardener said there's been a delay in this presentation, which in a way is all the more poignant since the death of Her Majesty the Queen, and you'll be one of the last recipients of the award, which in a way makes it that much more special. Zoo Chief Executive James Cretley said, "We are all thrilled at receiving this award and the recognition it brings to Marwell's conservation work." And there's a photograph of Alan with the Chief Executive and some of the team. And there's also a glimpse of what the award consists in. It looks like a rather circular-shaped glass ornament, probably inscribed, but very worthwhile. And it's good to see, know what at last what the award looks like. And then there's some staff showing some of the work carried out at the zoo.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on now with the death notices, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Hesketh, Muriel Irene, born in Hammersmith Hospital, London, in 9th of May 1933, passed away 13th of March 2023. Paris, David, sadly passed away on the 15th of March 2023. Patterson, Anthony Roger, known as Spike, passed away suddenly at home on the 17th of March 2023, aged 75. Prickett, Elizabeth Ruth, née Hunkin, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House, Winchester, aged 97 years. Primer, David Gerald, passed away suddenly on the 27th of March, aged 66, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Sheehy, Angela Elizabeth, passed away at home on the 15th of March 2023, surrounded by her family, aged 66. And there is quite a long article about Maurice Keith Charrett, aged 91, who passed away peacefully in Flowerdown Care Home, Winchester, on Sunday, March the 5th. Maurice was a champion of great causes in Winchester. He was a significant part of the group of volunteers who helped to save the Theatre Royal from becoming a Tesco in the early 1970s, and he took on the task of restoring Weak Pond, a rather neglected area next Stockbridge Road. And he was also the torchbearer and unsung hero for many different projects in Winchester to help improve the lives of many. Now, Christian comment has been written by Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church this week. The title is Lineker Tweet on Point. Thank you, Daphne.
Just 3 weeks ago, much to many people's surprise, a simple tweet from Gary Lineker was enough to remove virtually 2 days of the BBC's football coverage from the airwaves and threaten the BBC's reputation for fairness. Lineker's comments about the cruelty of the government's asylum policy and some of the language used drew predictable criticism from Tory politicians, suggesting he had broken the BBC's impartiality code. When the BBC unexpectedly took him off air, his fellow presenters and journalists quickly reacted in solidarity and refused to broadcast, resulting in severely limited sports coverage for 2 days. The BBC was forced to quickly reinstate Lineker and acknowledge that its current guidelines were unclear. But it was the much bigger issues of justice and compassion, along with fairness and standards, that were highlighted and widely discussed. Lineker has a record for speaking out on asylum, having welcomed refugees into his own home. His criticism of the policy as immeasurably cruel certainly seems to stand up, according to the Refugee Council, Pete Gregg, the founder of 24/7 Payer, was also quick to leap to Lineker's defence. Gary Lineker is not playing party politics, he's addressing dirty politics. Anyone desperate enough to cross the English Channel in a small boat in this weather surely deserves at the very least a warm welcome, proper cup of tea and a decent hearing. The Bible is clear on the issue of refugees with several relevant texts, including Leviticus 19, verses 33 to 34, Do not take advantage of foreigners who live among you in your land. Treat them like native-born Israelites and love them as you love yourself. Remember that you were once foreigners living in the land of Egypt. Volunteers from various Winchester churches have taken that instruction seriously, working together to raise awareness of the issues around migration and provide support, care and practical help to families who have settled here over the past few years, initially from the Middle East and recently from Ukraine. The other criticism brought against the BBC was a suggestion of double standards, aimed at key leaders who have an obvious political background. That's a much bigger question than I have space for here, but once again it raises the important issue of leadership character. In 1 Timothy verse 3, the Apostle Paul writes, "The overseer is to be above reproach, and must also have a good reputation with outsiders." The Bible is more interested in a leader's integrity than the skills he or she possesses, and while this truth should clearly apply in the church, it is, I believe, a standard which should also apply in every walk of life. Archbishop Justin Welby summed this up most memorably and beautifully at the Queen's funeral last September. "People of loving service are rare in any walk of life. Leaders of loving service are still rarer. But in all cases, those who serve will be loved and remembered when those who cling to power and privileges are forgotten." And that's from Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Now, we've got a few letters to the editor this week. Nick, can you start us off with Historic Record, please?
This one's from Andrew Rutter, retired City Council Conservation Officer. Historic Record. "I have been trying to find out if this popular mayor's annual picture exhibition would be reinstated after the Ark replaced the old Discovery Centre, and was told this year that it would not. An historic town needs to keep traditions alive, and people looked forward to seeing what parts of their area used to look like. It was founded by Stopher, a 19th century architect mayor, who commissioned a retired art teacher to paint watercolours of historic buildings threatened by redevelopment. Hopefully, succeeding museum curators, mayors, would see the point of adding to this nucleus, as, for example, Sir Peter Shepherd's watercolour sketch of his building to replace the Guildhall in the 1950s. I did my best to get new pictures added by John Reynolds, the best draftsman in the city. It seems silly to deny people the possibility of seeing public collections. Is it that the Cultural Trust doesn't think that many of these pictures are of a high enough artistic standard? If so, that's not the point. They are an irreplaceable historic record. Is the criticism that there are not enough pictures to enable the mayor's selection to be sufficiently individual? If so, could they not allow to select from the county's collection as well? For example, they have Trevor Percy Lancaster's fine depiction of St Cross Farm. It is to be hoped that the Trust will find a way to restore this tradition, as Winchester is constantly changing together with the population. Who can remember the listed George Hotel, demolished to widen the south end of Jury Street, or the character of Spitfire Bridge, or Twyford Down before the motorway? And that letter's from Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
Now, the next letter is entitled Climate Denial. It comes from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street in Winchester. "How will most people today read your article on the 1914 Andover riots, Chronicle March the 9th? Will they sympathise with the pregnant teenage servant girl, deserted by her seducer, son of her rich employer? Or will they condemn the rioters and laud the magistrates who jailed her? Perspectives change. In another article, a mother of three, terrified by the prospect of the ruined world her children seem likely to inherit, explains why she sees the disruption of our complacent journey towards that future as the only course open to her that can be true to her maternal duty. And who can argue that there is any other way open to ordinary people to change the disastrous course we are taking? All the evidence has been telling us for decades where our fossil fuel economy is taking us. All the respectable and respectful lobbying by the people that care about this has fallen on the deaf ears of successive governments, none more willfully deaf than the present one, perversely conniving in making things worse. Our Member of Parliament, Steve Brine, signs up to every fraudulent argument in the new climate change denial that we don't need to change behaviour, but just wait for technology to solve everything. As if there isn't enough law on the side of the powerful, he signs up to every repressive measure that the nasty party instinctively dreams up when it sees the powerless trying to be heard. Putinesquely, he conflates the threat of disruptive protests with the rights of criminals trumping public safety. He rages at motorway stoppages as lives brought to a standstill by some activist groups. But does he speak up for Ella Adukisi Debra, or the thousands whose lives are brought to a premature end by the air pollution of our great car economy? When the landlocked ice has melted and flooded our coastal cities, when the world's breadbaskets turn to deserts, and when 2 billion people search desperately for livable land, who will our children, if they survive at all, look back on and accuse? The activists who tried, or the politicians who denied? Chris Gunham, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And now another letter to do with the subject of Mr. Brine. It's from Martin Simpson, and it's headed True Tory with a question mark. Who does Mr. Brine represent? Asks Mr. Eve in the Chronicle, March 16. Well, an investigation on the lobbying accusation will look at that. But for Conservatives, there is a much bigger question. We should be asking, is Steve Brine actually even Conservative? If it doesn't look like a duck, doesn't walk like a duck, and doesn't quack like a duck, perhaps it isn't a duck. As a quick reminder, how do we recognise a Conservative? Someone who stands for low tax, small state, strong on defence and law and order. Someone willing to stand against the left's culture warriors peddling division through divisive identity politics that seem to infest all our institutions. Looking at Brine's literature, we can get a hint about how he sees himself. It is strangely hard to see the word conservative anywhere outside the small print. Even the branding colour is green and not blue. The emphasis suggests he identifies more as a generalised local MP. One wonders if he is in fact embarrassed to be a Tory MP. In fact, there seems to be a lot of that in Parliament at the moment. So, in 2024, as you stand in the voting booth looking for a Conservative, stop and think. The old cry of "we are a broad church" and "we need to keep the other lot out" cannot be enough any longer. If your candidate is a Suella, Jacob or Lee, you are good to go. If you have a Brine, Noakes or Hunt type, they might have more in common with Blairites. You must eject them resoundingly at the ballot box. And that comes from Martin Simpson, Benenden Green, New Oxford.
Changing tack somewhat, Mary Pearson writes about the devastating loss of park trees. I believe the planned loss of many trees on St Giles Hill, as described on page 5 of the Chronicle on March 16th, will have a devastating effect on much more than the hill itself. The project, as described, is to focus on access and biodiversity, with civic employees and volunteers, presumably under supervision, doing the work on the ground. I feel that enthusiastic rejuvenation should be restrained and expertise in heritage landscaping sought before work begins, with monitoring throughout. Is this proposed loss of trees, apparently largely for safety reasons, what Winchester people want? Councils in Sheffield and more recently Plymouth are discovering too late how much people love and value the mature trees in their city for their beauty and environmental qualities. Seen far across the city from the West Gate, the view of St Giles Hill, trees silhouetted against the sky, is breathtaking. Also, to look up at these trees when walking along the weirs, beside one of the loveliest chalk rivers in the country, is an experience to be grateful for. It is not the hill itself, but the trees on the skyline that the eye is drawn to, and that form a scenic background unique to Winchester. Councillor Radcliffe says that outside London, he cannot think of any town in Britain that has a park to rival the views from St Giles Hill. Surely, equally precious is the iconic view of St Giles Hill from elsewhere in the city, a view which would be greatly diminished by the loss of its mature trees. I hope that in 5 years' time, we will not look back regretfully on St Giles Hill as we had known it. Unused cycle lanes in north walls can be removed, but mature trees and the wealth of ivy on the hill, much beloved by bees and other insects, cannot be brought to life again. And that's from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winchester.
No campsite. This comes from Pete Cook at Firmstone Road, Winnell. Do people not think that it's about time Winchester finally had a decent campsite, which would bring in jobs and much-needed funds for the city? There is plenty of land around the old leisure centre and other unused sports fields in the city. Just a suggestion, as I personally think that it would be great as a cheap place to stay for visitors at a fair price and great for the city. After all, where is our nearest campsite for Winchester? Especially for tourists that don't drive and use public transport as a means to travel to places they would like to visit, as not everyone drives. Come on, Winchester City Council, this has got to be something to think about. Now, this comes from Pete Cook, Firmstone Road. He appears to be unaware that there is such a site behind what used to be the Percy Hobbs pub up on the roundabout, and that's available, and people use the 64 bus to come in. So there is a campsite, but little known about. Thank you.
And the next letter comes from Eunice Stevens, and it's headed Hit and Miss. From time to time, you publish letters from readers who wish to thank the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for the care they received. Regrettably, during my 10-day stay from February the 25th, when I was seriously ill, the standards of the practitioners varied considerably. Some were excellent, for example, Dr. Terry. Others less so. However, there is no doubt in my mind that the district nurses and the skin tissue viability nurse who have visited me in our home are the unsung heroes of the NHS. Not only are they highly skilled in what they do, but are compassionate and caring, the hallmarks of excellent nurses. I cannot thank them enough. Without their services, I would still be occupying a much-needed bed in the hospital when I would far prefer to be at home. And that's Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And Chris James writes, Bravo NHS! In view of much of the poor press given to the NHS recently, I am writing to say that I had an excellent experience in the A&E department in Winchester Hospital. Sent by my GP for urgent tests, I was looked after on arrival and then processed through the system in an efficient, timely and friendly way. All tests completed, I'm pleased to say that I was able to leave much reassured about my health. I would suggest that common sense says that this facility must remain fully open at Winchester Hospital to serve the needs of the ever-growing population of the area. So it's good to see our MP trying to reinvent himself as a supporter of this facility. Chris, Court Road, Kingsworthy.
The next letter is entitled Madness, and it might can raise curiosity as about what it refers to. Oxfam's new inclusivity report clearly demonstrates something that I have felt for a long time, namely that we're living in the middle of madness. Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Oh. I do know that there was something like a 9 or 19 page thing put out by Oxfam about how to write things, address things and consider things in an inclusive manner, and it was extremely detailed.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Now, this one's from Victoria Arthur, and it's headed Go Between. Last Thursday, a friend alerted me to your letters page. I had told her of my saga in getting to London the previous week. There, I read a charming letter written by Gemma Larkham, headed Lovely Gesture, thanking my husband and me for giving her a lift to Basingstoke Station when the trains were not running, once again, from Winchester. I hope you publish this so Gemma knows that I saw the letter and how much I appreciated her writing. Thank you, Hampshire Chronicle, for acting as a go-between. And that's from Victoria Arthur, St James Lane, Winchester.
Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news at hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with editorial comment, Belgarum and First Person. And the editor heads up her article this week with Different Ideals for the Same City Park. She writes, "The future of St Giles Hill is a fascinating example of how people can hold differing views when seeking the same thing. The Chronicle has recently reported the City Council plans to fell a large number of trees on the hillside park, partly to revive its flora and fauna. But as the letter you heard earlier shows, not everyone is happy. For many people, every tree is important and should be preserved. The disagreements show how people have different ideas on what is ideal. The council argues that safety is paramount, as many trees are affected by ash dieback and potentially unstable. It also points out that the neglect of the hillside has actually harmed biodiversity, with unrestricted tree growth shading out many areas and impacting on many species. Photos of St Giles Hill from 100 plus years ago show very few trees, and even as recently as the 1970s, the hillside was far more open. It must be right to undertake the felling. It is a shame that years of neglect has now made it necessary. And now, Balgarham has come up with two little pieces this week from an alternative point of view. Tell us more, Nick.
Right, the first piece is entitled TLC for Lovely Landmark. One of Winchester's most famous buildings is set to be repaired and brought back into use. City Council planners have given approval for Cheyne Court in the Cathedral Close to be restored. The much photographed property, used by Pilgrim School, has been empty for several years. It had previously, traditionally, been the head teacher's house, but the previous head, Dr. Sarah Essex, never lived there. Balgarham understands that was due to its antiquated state. She instead lived away from the school before her resignation last year. New head Tim Butcher is due to take over this September. The property dates from the late 15th century and until 1835 was the Bishop's Courthouse. It was revamped as a dwelling by well-known local architect firm Coulson and Son. Pilgrims was asked to comment but referred the inquiry to Winchester Cathedral, as it owns the building. A spokesperson did not address the issue of head teachers living in the property, but said work would start towards the end of this year. The project will see sensitive repairs made to the building's kitchen, bathrooms, roof and chimney, under the supervision of cathedral archaeologists and Historic England, they said. And that piece has an accompanying photograph of the wonderful Tudor frontage of Cheyne House, which is just inside the Cathedral Close entrance, close to the King's Gate. As you walk through into the Cathedral Close, it's on the right there. Now, on to something completely different. Writing on the wall for Putin. Winchester has been blighted in recent times with a rash of illegal painting on walls. It ranges from the taggings by individuals of limited talent to the work of Hendog, which, whilst not everyone's cup of tea, at least has artistic merit. Balgarham's eye has been caught by the message on a wall in Barfield Close, Bar End. It has been there for months and appears to be periodically refreshed. It demands that the Russian dictator should shuffle off his mortal coil, to paraphrase Shakespeare. In recent weeks, the unknown polemicist has added the names of Putin's henchmen, Lavrov, Peskov and Medvedev. The rest of the warmonger's scum, he quotes. And yes, of course, there has to be an accompanying picture of a brick wall headed up, Putin must die.
Now, in first person, Khalid Aziz writes about crime and punishment. Paul.
People who appear regularly on television have always been a target for those who delight in writing in to tell you of your shortcomings, real and imagined. During my own broadcasting career, now shrouded in the mists of time, I, like many of my on-screen colleagues, would receive weird missives from the Green Ink Brigade, so named because that was the colour of choice for the more deranged correspondent. Sometimes those writings gave you fulsome compliments, even offering their quavering hands in matrimony, but such letters were rare. Mostly they wrote with malice, pointing out how singularly unsuited you are to elbow your way into their living rooms each evening. In those pre-internet days, It was easy enough to consign such letters to the round file that was the waste paper basket. That was an end to it, until the next one. Even though postage was relatively cheap back then, it was still a cost that gave most hate mailers pause. Today, of course, the internet-connected keyboard offers those who, in the words of that keen observer of the human condition, singer James Blunt, spend their online time in darkened rooms with their trousers round their ankles, unlimited free opportunities to troll the world. So I felt particularly sorry for BBC South weather presenter Alexis Green as she movingly told the story of the ghostly trolling she received at the hands of one online pig. She tried to ignore this particularly nasty individual, but he persisted with his outrageous suggestions of a sexual nature, sending naked pictures of himself for good measure. For some, women on TV and weather presenters in particular, until the new world knew better, they used to call them weather girls, have been regarded as fair game. Well, it's anything but a game. In an interview with fellow BBC presenter Sally Nugent, Alexis outlined the profound effect the more than 100 messages and photographs had on her. She couldn't sleep, and now feels she cannot even go for a run alone. Her hapless dog has to accompany her. She had an overwhelming fear that somehow her stalker was watching her. Unable to tell her colleagues, Alexis admitted she felt physically sick and was shaking when presenting the nightly forecasts on South Today. Her on-screen tears said it all. You couldn't fail to be moved. Understandably, the interview focused on Alexis's ghastly experiences. Strangely, the television piece didn't name the perpetrator. Well, let's put that right. The miserable wretch is one Timothy O'Brien, aged 55, an avionics engineer from Christchurch near Bournemouth. On the 15th of March, he was sentenced to 17 weeks in jail and a restraining order, which means that if he keeps his nose clean, he'll be out by the middle of May. Oh, and he was fined £154, court costs. 8 weeks on, and £154 lighter, he will have been deemed to have paid his debt to society. Well, he hasn't. Alexis, I fear, will be picking up the pieces for years to come. That's how trauma works. It's surely time for a more creative approach to punishment for creeps like O'Brien. Not sure a couple of months in jail is the answer. Apparently, he apologised in court through his solicitor. Why couldn't he do it himself? Why was he not banned from using the internet for a few years? Serious motoring offences attract driving bans. And why wasn't this well-paid, middle-class man made to pay properly for his crime? Alexis might want his money, but it go to a charity of her choice. There is a concept called restorative justice which could be tried too. This is always led by the wishes of the victim, who can veto the process at any time. It works by making the perpetrator confront the effects of his crime. When successful, it can heal both victim and criminal. Make the punishment fit the crime. I'd like to add that Chris Packham, whom you all know as an environmentalist, has suffered a lot of persecution from hostile elements, which have caused great distress.
Thank you, Paul. Now, moving on to what's on. Let's have a look at a few items of interest. On Wednesday, the 5th of April, there's an exciting talk called St Kilda, Sailing to the Edge of the World. It's at 7:30, Shawford Parish Hall, and tickets are available from wincharspb1974@gmail.com. That's a journey from St Kilda to Oban. We've also got on Sunday the 16th of April, there's a medieval Jewish Winchester guided walk, 1:30, and that starts at the Guildhall in Winchester. Tickets are range from £5.50 to £11.50. And they can more information from tourism@winchester.gov.uk. We've also been told about an opera charity which provides a platform for emerging performers is bringing La Boheme to the stage in Winchester. Herne Court Opera will be performing at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street on Saturday the 15th of April. And tickets are £10 to £34. It starts at 7:30, as I say, on Saturday the 15th of April. And you can get tickets from the Theatre Royal box office. We've also got another item in Winchester Cathedral. This is a touch tour for blind and partially sighted visitors. The cathedral now provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour will provide you with a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked here or who were buried in the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you will be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. These tours will take a little over an hour, and afterwards you will be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. The next tours will be on Monday the 17th of April at 2:30, Friday the 9th of June at 2:30, and Monday the 17th of July at 11:30. If any group of up to 3 visually impaired people would like a tour on another date, there is a number to call. There's 2 ways to book. You can ring the visitor services team on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Or if you're able to use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 1st of April, the sun will set at 7:38 p.m. and on Wednesday the 5th of April, the sun will rise at 6:33 a.m. and will set at 7:44 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, and this is a rather sad story, and it's headed "Lost" in inverted commas, advice could have saved Mum. The family of a mother who died in childbirth say they hope lessons can be learned from their tragic loss after the inquest into her death. A 4-day inquest in Winchester, which concluded on March the 23rd, heard that Lucy Howell from Bishop's Waltham died in childbirth after a recommendation that she had should have a caesarean section was lost. Mrs. Howell opted for a natural birth for her second child, despite a surgeon's concerns she would be in danger if she did. Tragically, during the delivery, the 32-year-old suffered a uterine rupture resulting in an amniotic fluid embolism, and while daughter Pippa survived, she passed away. The coroner concluded on March the 23rd that even if she had had a C-section, there was no evidence to prove she wouldn't have suffered the same fate. Mrs. Howell's inquest heard she had undergone a caesarean for the birth of first daughter Rosie in 2017, which required specialist niche surgery to repair. Following this procedure, the specialist who operated on her advised against having a natural birth with any future pregnancy, a recommendation that got lost amid other inconsistencies. 4 years later, when she was expecting her second child, the consultant planning Mrs. Howell's baby delivery method did not ask the specialist about the surgery he had performed. In March 2021, she was admitted to Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to be induced. However, she died in labour. A narrative conclusion was recorded by Hampshire area coroner Rosamond Rhodes Kemp. She said, "Lucy Howell died on the 13th of March 2021 due to a uterine rupture and amniotic fluid embolism following a trial of labour that was her preference. This was on a background of a C-section in 2017 and a laparoscopic niche repair surgery in 2019. None of the obstetricians involved in her care had experience of that procedure. Had they known and conveyed that information to her, she may have chosen to have an elective C-section. However, while this may have avoided the rupture, there is no evidence to say she would have avoided the amniotic fluid embolism and therefore her tragic death." The Healthcare Safety Investigation Branch concluded that a senior review should have taken place when risks appear to have accumulated during Mrs. Howell's labour. Commenting on behalf of the family, their solicitor, Emma Beeson, said, "This has been an extremely painful week for Lucy's family. They have found it very difficult to learn that the decision regarding how to counsel her on the mode of delivery was made on the basis of a brief discussion at a photocopier, which was not documented in her notes at the time by either clinician. They heard how there were conflicting views on the induction of her labour, various miscommunications, and that there is a lack of national guidance on the method of delivery following uterine niche surgery. As the coroner has expressed this week, the team involved in trying to save Lucy's life worked extremely hard, and the family are very thankful for this. Sadly, despite the doctor's best efforts, Lucy could not be saved. Her absence is felt deeply every day, and her family hope that lessons can be learned from their tragic loss, so no other family has to go through what they have and are continuing to deal with."
Technology's touch of magic for care home. A newly opened Compton care home has brought a little magic to residents by providing a Magic Table 360 and the Happiness Programme. Provided to Shawford Springs in partnership with Social Ability and designed and manufactured in the UK, the Magic Table 360 uses interactive games to connect residents with staff and with each other, with research showing it improves the well-being of people living with dementia. Using interactive light projections, the Magic Table 360, which can be played independently or in a group, stimulates movement by inviting participants to take part in all sorts of different fun activities, such as popping bubbles, playing the piano, colouring in pictures, sweeping leaves, or interacting playfully with fish. Games are rich in colour, movement and detail, and allow people of all ages to play in a safe and comfortable environment. The table is also portable, so it can be used wherever residents feel most comfortable, and can be projected onto the floor, ceiling, walls, a whiteboard, or even a bed. The Happiness Programme allows for a range of games which change seasonally, and have country-specific versions covering 14 different categories. so there will always be something new for residents to try. The Magic Table 360 has been shown to improve mood and behaviours, especially across the mid to late stages of dementia. Greater physical, social and cognitive activity, reduction in withdrawal-like symptoms, weight gain, and positive impacts on relationships with care staff, friends and family. Dr. Peter Cowley, CEO of Barchester Healthcare, which runs Shalford Springs, commented, "We are delighted by the initial response of the residents at Shalford Springs Care Home when using the Magic Table 360. And there is a picture there showing three of the residents sat round a table and a member of staff behind. And quite clearly, the picture there is being directed onto the table, and it's showing them playing tennis. So it's a green covering across the table with a match score of 15-40.
Shoppers stumped by missing bench mystery. Shoppers and visitors to Winchester High Street have been left perplexed by the removal of benches in the city centre. Most of the seating in the centre, such as that near the Buttercross, has been removed, leaving small holes where the bench legs once stood. One visitor, Jackie Powell from Andover, said she was dismayed to not be able to find a spot to sit on March the 23rd. She has recently recovered from major surgery, so needed a place to rest. She said, "Whenever I come into Winchester, I like to sit by the Buttercross, but this time there were not any seats. The shops did not have a clue where they had gone. There were no signs, and one person said they had gone away for the coronation, but most didn't know." The benches have been removed by Winchester City Council for maintenance. In January, a Chronicle reported on their removal, with the council saying they would be replaced as soon as possible. After asking for an update, a council spokesperson said that work was still underway and on track to be returned in April. They said from the Broadway up to Jury Street, "We've already moved, replaced, seven of the standard benches. We've also provided an additional two, to replace ones that were removed in previous years when they were beyond repair. These are already in place. Additionally, we removed seven bespoke benches, and they are currently being refurbished by the manufacturer, Factory Furniture. These are due to be returned mid-April and will be installed soon after. It was more cost-effective to ship them all at the same time than individually. In the meantime, to make up for the temporary reduction of seating, we have converted the concrete planters in the High Street into seats near Marks and Spencer's and the Guildhall, adding wooden slatted tops to them for comfort. By the end of the works, there will be an overall increase in seating areas in the High Street, but we do apologise for the inconvenience in the meantime."
Farmers Market is rated best in the UK. And I think by Farmers Market, they are also including the stalls in the High Street, which are there often in the week, as well as the actual traditional Farmers Market at the weekend. "Winchester's Farmers Market has been crowned the best in the UK, much to the delight of stallholders and locals. HelloFresh, a recipe box provider, declared the Winchester Market the winner, after judging a selection of markets across the nation, using criteria such as how often they open each month, how long they stay open during the day, the number of stores available, and the online ratings from customers. The Hampshire Chronicle went down Winchester High Street to ask locals what they love about the farmers' market and how important it is for the town to have easily accessible fresh produce. Stall owner Mark Topham praised the farmers' market for attracting a diverse range of customers. He said that there is a great mix of people, and added that having the market right on the High Street helps a great deal. Florist Ronnie Osmond added that the market is very popular and gets very busy on Fridays and Saturdays. Winchester resident Jenny Farthing said the market is great for Winchester as the city needs the fresh produce because supermarkets put everything in plastic. I don't want to put everything in plastic and I think that the quality is better. She also said that she loves to buy fruit, vegetables, cheese and olives. Local Christopher Brooks praised the quality of food available and said that the farmers' market is very friendly and gets very busy. Roger Walters told the Chronicle that he loves how the market brings a lot of people in and that the variety of people is amazing.
Good news for Winchester, as Winchester folk reveal why we're number one. The cathedral, the walks, I just think there is so much tradition and age attached to the city. This is how one resident reacted to the news that Winchester has been named the best place to live in Hampshire for 2023. Winchester beat the likes of Lymington and Southsea to the number one spot in Muddy Stiletto's County Awards for the best town in Hampshire recently. The Hampshire Chronicle went to Winchester City Centre to speak to local people about the city and why they love it. Having just moved into the area 2 days prior, Chris, 52, already believes that the city has a nice atmosphere. He said, "It is quiet and chilled out, yet has a nice atmosphere to it." Jay, 72, said that he likes the history. "There's a lot of things to do in a very beautiful place." Local 74-year-old cyclist Martin lauds Winchester. "It feels safe here to ride on my bike." He also said that there is a strong sense of community here. The ratings were published by women's lifestyle website Muddy Stilettos, which creates a list every year of the best places to live in England and breaks that down regionally. The best places this year in Hampshire were, in order, Winchester, Lymington, Southsea, Petersfield, Hartley Whitney, Alsford, Romsey, Cowes, Odiham and Yarmouth.
The more the merrier for Big Spring Clean. Local people took to the streets for a litter picking event in an attempt to spruce up their neighbourhood in Winchester. The Winnell Forum, a group that focuses on making a difference in the local area, organised last Saturday's event, the first of the year. The big Winnell clean-up took place in Winnell Manor Park, and dozens of people helping to collect scores of bags of litter within 2 hours. Recently appointed co-chair of the group, Sam Feltham, said the first big Winnell clean-up was a resounding success with over 60 people helping collect 30 bags of litter. "A huge thank you to everyone involved and especially to landscape company ID Verd, who provided all the litter pickers and bin bags as well as taking all the rubbish away for us. I'm very much looking forward to the next one in late September. The more the merrier." And there's a photograph of the 60-odd with their bags and being addressed by Sam Felton, I assume, taken by the Chronicle.
New hospital unit to speed up surgical care. A new surgical unit has opened at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, supporting patients who need urgent surgical care to get the treatment they need sooner. The surgical assessment unit can care for patients who have either been referred to the unit by their GP or who have been identified as suitable for the unit when they arrive in the emergency department, reducing the number of patients waiting to be seen. The unit means that patients have direct access to specialist surgical staff, speeding up expert assessments and ensuring patients can start to get the treatment they need sooner. Once at the unit, patients are either examined straight away or, if more appropriate, they can return home and go back for investigations or treatment at an ambulatory clinic. Against the backdrop of sustained pressures across NHS services, the unit is just one of the solutions Hampshire Hospitals is introducing to provide quality and timely care for as many patients as possible, reducing the number of people in emergency department waiting rooms and supporting flow through the hospital. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "The surgical assessment unit is all about providing patients with access to as many of the services available to patients on hospital wards, such as assessment by senior staff and diagnostic scans, without needing to be admitted to the wards. We have tested this model at our hospital in Basingstoke, where it has made a big difference in reducing overnight admissions, while ensuring patients get the investigations and care they need. It is great to be able to provide this service in Winchester as well. A huge thank you to the teams who have worked so hard to get this unit up and running. It is wonderful to see so many expert teams work closely together to help provide the best possible care to patients in the right place and at the right time." Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "I am delighted to be able to open the new surgical assessment unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. This new unit is part of an ongoing programme of investment at RHCH and shows how the staff here in Winchester are continuing to innovate to care for those in their care. The SAU will have an immediate and positive impact on patients, as they will be able to access the care they need more quickly before being able to go home to their loved ones." And it's accompanied by a photograph of the full surgical team in their masks, beaming away, looking very competent.
Science Centre egg hunt with a difference. Winchester's Science Centre is inviting families to try out an Easter egg hunt unlike any other. Between Sunday, March the 18th and Monday, April the 17th, including every day during the Easter school holidays, families are invited to join in with an oviparity egg hunt. An oviparity egg hunt means visitors will be looking for nests containing eggs laid by animals that hatch, rather than brightly coloured Easter eggs. Once children spot all the nests, they'll be in for a delicious Easter treat. Visitors are also invited to head off on a pollination exploration in Flower Power, a free live science show where they can discover more about this vital part of nature. The show offers an in-depth look at how pollination works through exciting experiments and live demos. There will also be bubble fun in Science Live. Families can get hands-on and become part of the experiments. Or visitors can head over to Biospace to help plant the Boom and Bloom Garden and discover more about what plants and flowers need to grow and come back in the summer, to see how much this has changed. There will also be a pair of shows taking place at the planetarium for families to enjoy. Zoom Into the Stars for a family space adventure in Solar System Quest, a live presenter-led show. Budding astronauts will discover if there are any planets in our solar system that hold the ingredients we need to live in space.
Ambassadors for Autism. Hampshire residents are encouraged to join a community scheme that helps support people on the autistic spectrum. And from March 27th to April 2nd is Autism Acceptance Week, and the Hampshire Autism Partnership Board is shining a light on the Ambassador Scheme. Launched in 2015, The scheme is designed to build better understanding and acceptance of autism within communities across Hampshire. Ambassadors help raise awareness of autism, identifying positive changes within organisations and environments that help autistic people to live independently. So far, more than 1,000 people have registered for the scheme and are provided with full support and training. Councillor Fran Carpenter, co-chair of the Autism Partnership Board, said, "The Ambassador Scheme continues to go from strength to strength, enabling autistic people to have a voice. Every person on the autistic spectrum is different and will have their own strengths and challenges. Many autistic people need extra time to process information or may feel intense anxiety in certain situations or find noise and bright lights painful and distressing. Autism ambassadors help communities understand how they can make reasonable adjustments to support autistic individuals." She added that if you're passionate about making a difference, visit the Autism Ambassador Scheme's website, askambassador.uk, to find out how to take the next step.
Refurbished Cathedral Cafe back in business. The Cathedral Cafe has seen success after it was refurbished. The popular eatery closed for 5 weeks before reopening recently with a new look and menu. The refurbishment has seen a new counter put in, as well as new furniture. The secret garden behind the cafe has also been expanded and spruced up. So I guess that means it's not so secret. Anyway, to carry on, the refurbishment has also come with a new menu for the cafe, featuring local produce including old Winchester cheddar and items from Winchester Bakery. Despite the changes, old favourites such as pancakes, eggs benedict and scones are still available. Robert explained, "Our head chef, Steve Wilson, joined us in November. He has introduced a lot more home baking, so all our cakes are baked on site. We do fresh sourdough bread, which we use on our menu as well. We've got soup on every day, so we've got a waste knot. This is basically where the farmers are producing too much that they can't sell to the supermarkets, so instead of them going to landfill, they're all nice and fresh, we take them to use them in our soups, so it's really good and it helps the environment. The Cathedral Cafe is open Mondays to Sundays from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. And there's a photograph of the new look cafe with a streamlined counter and a selection of really delicious looking cakes all nestling under those glass lids. So well worth visiting.
Park runners hit 10-year milestone. April the 27th marks 10 years since the first park run in Winchester, with around 200 people running the 5K around North Walls Recreation Ground back in 2013. The event was set up by Tamsy Gill with support of Winchester and District Athletics Club, WADAC, to create a free and healthy community activity. Winchester Park Run now sees about 350 people take part each Saturday at 9 a.m. running, walking, volunteering or even pushing a buggy round. Co-event directors Peter Humphreys and Sarah Witt took over at the beginning of March and are hoping to see the park run through another 10 years. Peter, 49, said, "When Tamsy first spoke about the purpose of having a park run, it was very much about having a community feel and encouraging people to exercise. We want people to take credit for themselves, as this would not have lasted a decade if people hadn't volunteered from the beginning. We're here to help everyone else volunteer and keep it going for another 10 years. Sarah said, "It's social, communal and safe, and there's lots of people around to look out for you. No one is bothered about time. It's a fantastic social occasion. I've met so many friends through it. We've got lots of people who have been running for those whole 10 years. We've got people who came to the first one and will hopefully be here for the 10th anniversary run. It's a chance to have more cake. And cake is always popular at Park Run. Runner and Park Run ambassador Andy James said, "I've never really missed a week since 2015. It's the people who motivate me to come back time after time, and it kickstarts my weekend. There's definitely a mental health benefit of running in a big group like this, and the event gets you up in the morning and gives you a purpose." Sports psychology student Abby Kramer is volunteering with the Park Run for her course at Winchester University. Abby said, "There's a huge sense of community here, a really positive atmosphere. There are the obvious benefits of exercise, which help to improve your mood. The group aspects helps even more, and nobody feels alone or embarrassed. I'd consider volunteering even after I've completed my course." Sports massage therapist Jamie Goff gives up his time each Saturday to offer free massages before and after run, as well as some motivational halfway jelly babies. Jamie said, "I'm not affiliated with the Park Run in any way, although some other park runs do hire a sports massage person. I've been coming here for a year and a half and received such a positive response. People say they don't have the time or money to take out their day and address their muscular issues, so I tell them to come here, where I can do it for free. The jelly babies help with motivation and give that smile to everyone." Lara said, "It keeps you motivated running with a big group of people. These guys run as friends, and then we go for pancakes after. I'm so excited for the 10th anniversary. I've been telling people at work to come and do it to celebrate." As well as the 5K every Saturday, there is a 2K junior park run, 9 a.m. on Sundays, for children aged 4 to 14. The 10th anniversary park run takes place on April the 22nd.
A prisoner died after history of mental health problems. Thomas Victor Huntley was found dead in the care unit of the prison on May the 29th, 2020. The inquest, which is expected to last up to 2 weeks, heard how Mr. Huntley, aged 54, had been recalled to prison shortly before his death after being released on licence in 2018. He was transferred to the care unit after he had been self-harming, but was found dead 5 days later. Speaking to the 11 members of the jury, Assistant Coroner Robert Simpson said, "The main issues here are Mr. Huntley's state of mind and the response of the medical and prison staff to the self-harm incident. Also, if he intended to take his own life and if it could have been prevented." A statement was read out on behalf of Mr. Huntley's former partner, Elizabeth Gilmartin. It said, "We met in 2003 and separated in 2009. Tim was a very hands-on father. His daughter was his whole life. He was very funny and could light up a room with his smile. He was the love of my life. It was difficult at times due to his mental health problems. He never got the support he needed for it. I loved him with all my heart and I still do. He told me about the lack of support in prison for his mental health. It's absolutely heartbreaking. I believe the prison never gave him a chance to survive." A statement from Mr. Huntley's niece, Amanda Lewis, said, "We were like brother and sister. He was a very likeable and loving young man. However, he got into trouble with the police from a young age and spent most of his life in and out of prison. I always tried to be there for him. He was happy, but suffered badly with mental health. He had a very big heart. We will always miss him and love him dearly. The last contact I had with him was in May 2020, and he felt isolated due to the COVID restrictions. The inquest heard that Mr. Huntley's health problems centre around nightmares and flashbacks. He had been assessed multiple times by health professionals, but COVID restrictions meant that therapy sessions had to be online. Dean Sinclair, head of safer custody at Winchester Prison, gave evidence to the inquest. He said, "COVID had a massive impact on the prison service. We had to focus on infection control. There were high levels of isolation at that time. The whole thing was quite messy and difficult to manage." The inquest is due to hear evidence from a range of medical staff at the prison, the Ministry of Justice, and NHS officials. The inquest continues.
First-time writer, aged 82, gets published. An Oliver's Battery resident has published his first book at the age of 82. Lou Lewis's book, The Station Road Sewing Circle, published by Welsh publisher Cambria Publishing, is a collection of short stories involving the titular group as they secretly investigate various criminal activities in Pembroke. Lou, who moved to Winchester 15 years ago, explained, "I didn't retire from work until I was 76. I did various jobs and I didn't retire. And then I decided to write a novel about my other hobby, ancient Egypt, and I couldn't interest any agents in that. So then I decided at the end of lockdown to start writing a series of short stories about my hometown, Pembroke, in West Wales. And the Sewing Circle ladies, there are 13 of them, they represent quite a useful core of the ladies that I knew when I was in the town. So the places in the town are still there. The characters are reflective of some years ago, but of course the names and events have been changed somewhat." Lou continued, "The whole thing, if you like, is a Welsh production. The publisher, the cover artist, and myself. And the best part about it all, of course, was seeing the book as a real-life book in front of me. That was an achievement." Lou is now focusing on writing a follow-up. He said, "It's really taken off. I've never really retired. I've always had things on the go. So I've just got a new career at the age of 82. I'm an insulin-controlled diabetic, and I've been on insulin for 50 years, and I've been awarded a medal by the British Diabetic Society. So 2023 has almost been a brand new chapter for all of us. And I should add that my wife, Gloria, of 58 years, she has always supported me and all that I have done. In particular, she has assisted me in not letting diabetes get in the way of what I've wanted to do." And that's accompanied by a picture of the book jacket, which looks rather intriguing, should be well worth a read, and a picture of smiling Lou Lewis, and he certainly doesn't look 82.
Cathedral peregrines now have three eggs on nest. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine laid two more eggs over the last few days. After laying her first egg on March the 22nd, Winnie laid her second on March the 24th and her third on March the 27th. Winnie had two chicks last year named Elizabeth and George, who flew the nest in August. Writing on the Winchester Cathedral website on March the 27th, Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "Overnight, Winnie laid her third egg, the second having arrived on Friday. She is now into her incubation period, which will see her keeping the eggs warm enough to allow the embryos to develop. There may still be a fourth egg to be laid later this week. Quite often that will never hatch as it's lagging 2 days behind all of the others. William will occasionally cover the eggs when Winnie is away for short breaks, often first thing in the morning after a long overnight shift. We can expect these eggs to hatch in the last week of April. Mr. Betton has been monitoring the penguins for the last few years. And there's a lovely picture attached here. We can see, obviously high up on the cathedral, one of the peregrines peering over the parapet roof with, behind them, three eggs sat on the nest, all safe and sound on top of the cathedral.
Oh, what have we got?
Movie memories for 100-year-old's birthday.
Lovely.
A Winchester care home resident celebrated her 100th birthday in style with friends, family, a movie of her life, and a card from the King. With a career in the women's branch of the army in the Second World War, travels around the world, and a family, Eileen Jones had much to celebrate. The team at the Signature Care Home in Stockbridge Road kicked off the festivities by serving a family meal before songs including Eileen's Requests, Happy Birthday, and 50s, 60s, and 70s classics. After a dance and sing-along, Eileen was showered in gifts and cards before the much-anticipated card from King Charles III for her centenary year. Speaking on reaching the milestone, Eileen said, "It does not make any difference to me as I am still the same person that I was years ago. Every time I go to bed, my goal is to wake up a day older and continue to enjoy life as much as I can. That is the advice I would give others." Signature's Winchester General Manager, Michelle Japlett, said, "Eileen has a quirky sense of humour and is very easy to connect with. She always finds positivity in everything she does, and she can effortlessly touch your heart." The day concluded with an afternoon tea party alongside Eileen's fellow residents. The group then watched a movie of her life with the soundtrack of Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley, before finishing with a birthday cake freshly paired but prepared by the home's catering team. Eileen was born in Littlehampton, joined the World War II effort in the ATS at age 17. Stationed in Guildford, Reading, Kingston and Hampstead, the Armorian helped to plot the movements of enemy aircraft for the anti-aircraft defences that were crucial for protection against strikes upon the country. It was during this period that Eileen met her husband-to-be, who she married after the war. The couple spent much of their lives in North London raising their two children. The couple developed a true taste for travel, with Eileen even embarking on solo trips down the River Nile and across the Atlantic on Queen Mary's II ocean liner after her husband died in 2005. The mother of two moved to Signature, Winchester, in 2018, where she enjoys activities such as flower arranging, music classes, and arts and crafts. Happy.
Okay. Now, the next item is headed Town is Top Place to Live. Well, we've already learnt that that was Winchester, according to Nick's item, but there is a competitor, and it's Alsford. Alsford is one of the best places to live in the southeast and is as good as Brighton, Guildford and Oxford. That is according to the Sunday Times Best Places to Live guide, which described the market town as pretty and peaceful and talked up its good schools, great independent shops and cafes. Although the Sunday Times say it might feel out of the way, the judges added that there was always something going on, thanks to the sports clubs, community choir and theatre, as well as a horticultural society and two art societies. Alsford locals were delighted to hear their home was almost at the top of the leaderboard, coming in second to Chichester in Sussex. Kelly Mills, behind the counter at the Loaf Bakery, said, "Alsford is a lovely place to live. You don't really appreciate it if you've always lived here, but visitors definitely do." Her colleague, Debbie Goodyear, added that the village is a real community. Everybody knows everybody here. Local resident Thomas Baker was rather more restrained, saying, It's all right, I suppose. There are a few nice pubs. Auntie Graham, the owner of the Swan Hotel, was surprised the market town didn't come first. She said there is a genuine community feel here and some great local organisations which help support us all. Her colleague Pip Huff agreed and said, lots of locals support each other here. I'm glad it's made the list. Bill Wichard, who was tucking into breakfast, added, it's a safe place to live. You could leave your car unlocked and it would be completely fine. And I think that is very unusual.
Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have time for this week. Now, when you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns. Thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.